And welcome back, folks. Episode 15 of the Pinch Talk Podcast with Mario and Pat. Now, for today's episode, it's going to be just me, just Mario. I'm not going to explain to y'all exactly why Pat is not here, but just know he couldn't record today. So, yeah, y'all stuck with me. That's too bad. So, episode 15. We got a whole lot of shit to talk about. Damn, I just we again. See, I'm getting used to that. But there's a lot of shit to talk about. Baseball just loves to give me just topics by itself. It never fails to disappoint. Remember to check out the podcast on Twitter. Remember to check out our Baseball 101 terms threads that we do. Remember to check out past articles on Medium. Remember to check out, of course, all the platforms. The podcast will be there: YouTube, Spotify, Apple Pods, Breaker, anything you want. The podcast will be there. And yeah, I think that's the introduction out of the way. So, first things first, we all know that there's a big topic, of course, to cover. You know, there was a lot of big shit that went down in baseball this week, and of course, non-baseball, sports-related shit. Cover that to the best of my abilities. But before that, of course, as always, let's go ahead and kind of give a little recap of kind of what the action is looking like in MLB, kind of how the standings are looking like, because there's a lot of teams hot and there's some surprising teams that have gotten cold. You got the American League East, the Tampa Bay Rays. They're realizing their potential. Me and Pat, we talked about them a lot before the season began, about, you know, how they could potentially challenge the Yankees for the division crown. And they're playing like it, man. They're 23-11, 8-2 in their last 10. They're killing it, and this is with a lot of injuries to their pitching staff, so that's very impressive. After that, you got the Yankees, who actually lost 7 straight because everyone's just getting injured. They're 17-13, not a good look for them, but I mean, they're gonna make the playoffs anyway. They're too deep, and the guys that got injured will eventually make their way back. But yeah, they're facing a tough test right now because they're 4 games back and the Rays are a good team. After that, you got the Toronto Blue Jays, who began the season just awful. And now they're playing real good baseball. And it's happening, folks. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Vladito, Vladdy, however you want to call him, he's exploding, people. He has a 937 OPS in August. He's striking out only 12% of the time, which is very low. And he's walking 11% of the time, which is extremely impressive from a 21-year-old kid. He is hitting for average. He's getting on base. He's hitting for power. He's everything that we were sold. And I think a lot of people, you know, I think a lot of people were too quick kind of to jump on the gun and say, he's kind of a bust. He's only 21, folks. He's going to be very good for a very long time. So, that's the Blue Jays. They're playing very good baseball right now, very fun baseball. Then you got the Orioles and the Red Sox. Not a whole lot to say about them. The Orioles had a collision with reality, and the Red Sox fucking suck. The American League Central, this is a interesting division. You got a 3-way race, the Cleveland baseball team / Indians / Spiders. and the White Sox, they're both hot, and the Indians are leading the division. The Twins, who have led the division pretty much all throughout the year, are actually kind of slumping a little bit right now. They're only 4-6 in their last 10. They've lost 4 in a row. And they're going to have a battle in their hands because this is a 3-way race right now, people. Not like it's been the last, 4 or 5 years with only one clear-cut winner of this division. So, yeah, this is an interesting division. Not what you would have expected going into the season, but 2020 is weird like that. Then after that, of course, is the Tigers, who are actually just below 500. Very competent. And the Royals, of course, in the basement. The American League West, you got the A's playing like one of the best teams in baseball, still very consistent. And the Astros, of course, coming back to form. The Astros are 2.5 games back. There's still a long way to go. I mean, not really in like the grand scheme of things. In a full baseball season, a 28-27 game sprint would be a sprint. But in this case, it's still damn near half the season to go. A lot of things can change. So it's a race between the Astros and the A's, because after that, it's just ugly, man. The Rangers, the Mariners, and the Angels, they've all lost 20 plus games. Like, they're just bad. So yeah, not a whole lot to say aside from the fact that there might be some trades, and you know, we're gonna get into that. The National League, moving on, a lot more mediocrity here. Like, in the American League, you got a lot of teams that are just terrible. In the National League, you got a lot of teams that are just being mediocre. The Dodgers, of course, are ruling over the National League West, to my dismay. They're the best team in baseball. It's not even close. The Dodgers have guys sitting on the bench and, you know, getting occasional at-bats who would start for a good 85% of teams in this league. It's pretty unfair. The Padres have played really good, and they're hot right now. The Rockies, they kind of got it together. You know, I eviscerated them. I just tore them apart last week. But they're somewhat getting together. But I mean, they're still mediocre. Run differential's bad. It's gone negative, actually, and they're at 17-16. Then the Giants are actually looking a lot more respectable than I expected them to. Please trade Mike Yastrzemski, if that's how you say it. How the fuck you say his name? Trade him to a real team. And then the Diamondbacks, big ass disappointment. The National League East, this division is full of mid. The Braves are leading the division, but they have not been convincing at all. I mean, injuries don't help that. You know, they've lost Soroka and a couple other pieces, but yeah, they've not been as convincing as you might have wanted. Ronald Acuña Jr. is back though, but yeah. Then you got the Marlins and the Phillies tied, both 500. Neither team impresses me, although I will say the Marlins are far, you know, they're a bit further ahead in their rebuild than I expected them to be. The Phillies are just mid. A team with a bullpen like that is not gonna put fear in nobody come October, so I don't really care. And then you got the Mets, who we'll talk about later, and the Nationals with the big fucking case of World Series hangover. So yeah, it's bad. Then the Central, now this division is just a shit show. The Cubs are at 19-14. They're leading the division comfortably, but they are the least intimidating 19-14 team I've ever seen in my life. They just don't put fear in nobody, man. That bullpen's bad. Craig Kimbrel, he's done. He's just destroyed. Like, there's nothing to him anymore. You know, might as well have burned all that money you gave him. Then every single team is under 500. The Brewers, the Cardinals, the Reds, who have been a disappointment, and the Pirates are the worst team in baseball. So yeah, y'all can see how, you know, kind of how that's going. The good teams that we expected to be good are good. Some disappointments, you know, the Reds, Diamondbacks, but the good teams are good. The bad teams are bad. And, you know, the bottom dwelling teams that kind of were like, oh my God, you know, like the Orioles are above 500 20 games into the season. What the fuck? You know, some shit like that. They're kind of having a hard collision with reality, and they're falling back into shit. So yeah, that was kind of, you know, just quick little standings update for y'all. Some teams were very hot. The White Sox, I mentioned them. The Padres, like, the Rockies played the Padres, and the first game of that series was just brutal, because it was one of those cases where you could just tell that a team was just hot. Like, every hitter was seeing the ball perfectly. But anyway, so let's get into a topic that is, of course, the big one. The protest, and that generated as a result of the whole incident with Jacob Blake. And now, disclaimer, the person you're listening to right now is whiter than the inside of a pillow. So I ain't here to tell black folks how to feel about police brutality, okay? But I'm just going to lay out the facts, because, you know, this is a podcast. You know, we talk about baseball. We put out information. So I'm going to lay out the facts for what I know. Now, granted, I don't follow the NBA like that, but it was all over the timeline, so can't help but not see it. So basically, after that whole situation went down, and we all know what the deal with police brutality is. I mean, there's no one out there who can defend the cops to me. But the Milwaukee Bucks, who are in the NBA bubble, they decided to not play a game they had against, I think it was the Magic or something like that. to boycott it, or, you know, quote unquote boycott it. I mean, it's more of a strike than some, and you know, other thing, but they basically decided not to play as a protest for what was going down. And basically as a result of that, because other teams would have looked mad pussy had they played after one team decided to sit out, all the games were canceled, and all the games, you know, the day after were also canceled. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, the Bucks were like talking with like the governor of wherever or something like that. And it caused a ricochet effect into the baseball world. The Brewers also sat out the game. And then, you know, as a result of that, other teams decided to sit out games that day. And then even the day after, the Rockies, for example, the Rockies played the game the day of, you know, of the Bucks and all the other NBA teams sitting out. But they actually sat out the day after. So it was just a clusterfuck. But yeah, basically, yeah, so sitting out was basically supposed to be, you know, this whole, this is how we're fighting racism, guys, you know, all that shit. I personally don't buy any of that. And this is, once again, I'm not telling black folks how to feel and how to react to police brutality, but this is a reminder that all this is coming from the NBA and definitely from people even higher up. So the NBA is infamous to anyone with a brain as the league of, you know, the ultimate league of fake activism. Like, that's kind of like their whole pitch. So I just don't trust anything the NBA does in terms of like activism or nothing, because the NBA is the kind of league that believes that putting a black and white filter on their logo and putting, you know, Black Lives Matter on the fucking courts actually does something tangible. And I've never heard none of these athletes and none of these, you know, none of the owners of these teams and none of that actually talk about real shit like, you know, abolishing police, you know, actually schooling people in terms of like finances, buying shit, like giving people empowerment. I've not heard none of that. All I see is just the same fear tactics, and not just fear tactics, but mind wars as well, because this is mind wars. Yeah, like, that's really all I got to say on it. Now, grant, my opinion really doesn't mean a whole lot, but that's just my two cents on it. I mean, just the fact that people think that awareness is actually going to accomplish anything at this point, to me, is crazy, because everyone knows the deal with the, you know, situation. So anyone who chooses to not know it is ignorant by, you know, by their own will, so there can be reform. And I would say that if you think that spreading awareness can make white folks as a whole feel bad and start treating black folks in a different way, then you are grossly mistaken. The only two things that move the needle in this world are money and violence. So yeah, consider that. And yeah, I think that's all I gotta say. Like, I don't have a whole lot else, fam. I don't buy any of these sitting out is gonna do anything until I see anything tangible, like, you know what I said. Because if not, I mean, what the fuck is the point? And everything just felt so organized, dog. Like, I just couldn't get behind it. It never felt genuine to me. The fact that it comes from the NBA does not help, because we all know what they do. Like, that's really their whole lane. They're the league that's like, you know, so liberal, so empowering, but they don't allow certain players to do certain things that they would want to do. So yeah, the NBA is full of shit, and MLB is too, and we're gonna talk about that and Rob Manfred afterwards. So yeah, moving on from that, because I don't really have a whole lot else to say. Two kind of important things to talk about. You know, onto strictly MLB related shit. The trade deadline, I think it's actually 4 p.m. Eastern time on Monday. Now, I'm recording this on a Sunday, and I'm recording this on 11 a.m. like 12 a.m. I mean, 12 a.m. or 1 p.m. I don't know, but like, it's like in the evening, like where I'm from, and so you got to take like 6 hours less, and that's the time in the Eastern time. But anyway, so it's basically 4 p.m. Eastern time. the trade deadline. So basically roughly 24 hours away, 24 plus hours away. There hasn't been a whole lot of movement, really. The only big thing I've seen is Trevor Rosenthal. I actually have it here. I'm looking it up. Yeah, the Padres trade for Trevor Rosenthal, reliever. They actually gave him a pretty good prospect in return. They gave him... Hold on a second. They gave him Edward Olivares, who's a top 20 prospect for the Padres. He's a good outfield prospect. But yeah, like, there hasn't been a whole lot of traffic so far. Again, maybe this is like last year where it was very quiet and then the Astros traded for Zach Greinke. But I don't know, man. Like, there's a lot of teams that need starting pitching. Like, I went on MLB.com and they, you know, they made one of those lists of like six teams that need to trade for someone. And like the first five teams, biggest need, starting pitching, starting pitching, starting pitching, starting pitching, starting pitching. There's a big need for starters, for good starters, reliable starters, because I mean, you always need it, but especially now when so many people, when so many starting pitchers are getting hurt because of the, you know, lack of ramp up process and all that. So yeah, like guys like Trevor Bauer, I've seen names like Sonny Gray as well. I would throw John Gray into the mix, Lance Lynn. So yeah, you're going to see a lot of good, high level, controllable starting pitchers, you know, being talked about as, you know, the Astros need to trade him, the Yankees, White Sox. The Padres trade is actually, you know, for Trevor Rosenthal, it's a more minor deal, but it does help their bullpen, which has been surprisingly a big issue this year. And it kind of reminds me of that whole thing that the Padres ownership did, where they, you know, when they hired the new manager, Jace Tingler, they basically said, you know, we want to compete this year. And if we don't compete this year, heads are going to roll. And they're playing really well, thankfully, because they would fuck up their own rebuild if they happened to play bad and, you know, they just tore the shit up. But yeah, they're playing well, and you know, getting reinforcements for a bullpen never really hurts. So yeah, that's kind of it. Like, this it just has not been a busy trade deadline. Of course, there's been some bait trades in the past. If I had to bet, I would be very surprised to see both the Astros and the Yankees not do anything, because Yankees starting rotation is okay, but with the, you know, losing Sevy and all the losses they've experienced, I would think they would want to really, you know, add a good solid starter, preferably high level, of course, but you can never get exactly what you want. And then the Astros are the big one. The Astros, you know, they lost Justin Verlander. The starting rotation is very clearly the weak point of the team. And this is still a team that, no matter all the sign stealing, no matter how much everyone hates them, me included, this is still a team that 100% is ready to compete for championships. So I would think a guy like John Gray from the Rockies, for example, you know, high velocity wipeout slider, needs refinement in terms of, you know, command and better changeup and all that. I would think a guy like that would really intrigue him, but I don't know if the Rockies would deal John Gray, because, you know, they're delusional. But yeah, that's basically it. So that's that. And then we go on to another piece of MLB news. MLB, now, when they were discussing on, you know, before the season began for so long, on how to actually do the season, there was a lot of talk about, you know, copy, you know, the NHL and the NBA models of, you know, doing a bubble, you know, well, not one bubble, because, but like, do, no, a set of like maybe 2, 3, 4 bubbles, where you could put, you know, 10 teams each, for example, if there was like 3 bubbles, and that way it would be safer, right? Now MLB didn't do it because, you know, they had to spend 2 months negotiating in bad faith to try and fuck the players and try to get the public to hate the players. But, you know, I mean, what can you say to them, right? So basically they went through as if this was a normal season, except with no fans. And of course we all know there were 2 outbreaks, Marlins and Cardinals. If I'm not mistaken, they've had to cancel, well, not cancel, but postpone 37 total games so far due to, you know, Corona shit. And yeah, it seems like it's like they're getting through it. I haven't seen any like big like, oh no, like five games postponed in the same fucking day, like or like in 2 days because of Corona. Like they seem to have, you know, the worst is kind of over. And that was kind of what I said also in previous episodes. I thought that the whole Cardinals and Marlins, that would be the worst, you know, like the worst part of the storm. And people would kind of wise up and really not allow MLB owners money to kind of get compromised. So, yeah, so they didn't do well for the regular season, but they decided to be smart. And for the postseason, which will take basically the entire month of October, they've decided to do, well, nothing set in stone yet, but they have been talking about doing a bubble, and I can 100% see them doing this. I mean, they just need to. Like, there's no reason for it, you know, for them not to. Some things that I've seen, you know, come from Ken Rosenthal, who's, you know, pretty well connected. and some of these ideas that I'm looking at, for example, would be to do two bubbles, for example. So the National League postseason would be played in one bubble, and then the American League postseason would be played in another bubble. Now, the idea that was being debated was that the American League play in Southern California and the National League in Texas. Now, they want those two states because they're both warm states. There's a lot of ballparks in a very small area, in like near Chicago, for example. But that area is, of course, colder. There's chances of, you know, games getting rained out and all that, and they do not want that. So, yeah, that's it. Like, they wanted the American League. This is, you know, the proposal that was made, just, you know, throwing out ideas, right? So, American League, like I said, Southern Cali, National League in Texas. The idea was to host the World Series in the Rangers' new ballpark, Globe Life Field. That's the name. Looks like a fucking, I don't know, like, there was mad jokes being said when on Twitter when they revealed the new ballpark. But anyway, so that was the whole idea. Now, this is interesting. This is an interesting topic because, of course, is the whole, you know, takes, you know, home field advantage away because the Rangers are not going to make it to the World Series. It would be very interesting because they have choices for stadiums. The choices of stadiums in Texas, they're clear. Minute Maid Park at Houston. And then, you know, the Rangers new ballpark, Globe Life Field, in Arlington, Texas. So that's pretty cut in stone, you know, pretty set in stone. Then in Southern Cali, though, you have three possible options. You have Dodger Stadium, Dodgers. You have Petco Park, San Diego. And you would have Angel Stadium in Anaheim. Now, those, they would have to probably, I don't know. Yeah, I'm guessing they would pick two to, you know, kind of match with the National League playing in Texas. And that would be interesting to see which two would they, you know, they would choose. I'm guessing they would go for Dodger Stadium because, you know, it's a historic ballpark and it's a pretty good ballpark. I'm guessing they'd go with both LA stadiums, if I had to bet. Dodger Stadium and Angel Stadium, I don't see any reason for them not to. And no, don't say, you know, the Oakland Coliseum. That place is a shithole. And I'm sorry, like any A's fan, like, y'all guys deserve a better stadium. But yeah, and that new stadium better be in Oakland, by the way. But that's a topic, you know, for other podcasts and shit. But yeah, so that's basically it. Now, a lot of people shitted on MLB for not doing a bubble. I personally think that it was going to be a logistical nightmare. It could have been done. But considering that they spent so long negotiating in bad faith, then it was just not practical because they just wouldn't have been able to do it in time to get the season done, considering that they had fucked up. So also, you got to keep in mind that, but a lot of people were talking about, you know, how, well, you know, with the NHL and the NBA, then, you know, they did bubbles. They were fine. Well, yeah, but there were a lot less teams. Not only a lot less teams, but a lot less players. There's a lot more people involved in baseball, of course, 30 teams. All the people involved with that, not just the entire roster, but, you know, and of course, there was expanded rosters at the beginning of the year. You got the taxi squads, you got all the trains, all the people that travel with the team. That would be a logistical nightmare for MLB. And even if they had time, that would have been a huge problem. And Another thing to keep in mind, of course, is that the NHL and the NBA had already gotten through a big part of their seasons before having to cut shit out. So MLB hadn't even began. So that was another obstacle. But anyway, like, that's kind of the point. I'm convinced they're going to do a bubble. They better do one, because imagine the situation where in the middle of the playoffs there's an outbreak and now everything gets thrown out. And the whole scheduling, just everything gets fucked up, and it would be a fucking terrible look. And baseball has enough of a bad image with people to where, you know, more bad looks are a good thing. So yeah, that's kind of the news in terms of, you know, baseball. The trade deadline. I'm trying to think, like, trade deadline, the bubbles for the postseason. Whole sitting out, a little bit of season update. Oh wait, now here it comes. Here's the thing, the big topic for me this week, and it's a big topic because it kind of highlights just how inept the current, you know, baseball mandatories, let's just call them that, truly are. Now, in case y'all were not aware, and if you were not on Twitter for that, you know, for the time that all this happened, then feel bad for you. Brody Van Wagenen, the general manager of the New York Mets. Now, he got caught on a hot mic saying some not so flattering things about both the owners of the team they worked for, but also Rob Manfred. And this was a very interesting topic because he was caught saying some real shit. And then he kind of had to walk it back because, yeah, the people who pay him got mad. So here I have the statement. Well, I have both statements from the Mets, you know, from the Mets GM, you know, after, you know, in terms of damage control and the Mets owners and everything. But I also have, you know, the conversation, the transcript of, you know, the actual conversation of what they caught Brody Van Wagenen saying. And this will kind of open up a discussion to talk about Rob Manfred himself and, you know, what he does and why he's hurting baseball so much and really who Rob Manfred actually is. So, you know, let's get into it. So here's the transcript, right? So this is from Brody Van Wagenen. So he's saying, and I quote, "Baseball's trying to come up with a solution to say, you know what would be super powerful? Three of us here can't leave this room. You know what would be really great? If we just have them all take the field, then they leave the field, and then they come back and play at 8:10. And I was like, what? And then another voice says, "Who said that?" And Van Wagenen responds, Rob Manfred. And with Jeff, who's the Mets owner, scheduling is going to be a nightmare, and there's so much at stake. And I said, "Jeff, that's not happening." And then the other voice says, "They're not dealing with reality." And Van Wagenen says, "They're not playing, but that's Rob's instinct. And Rob, exactly what you and I were talking about, at leadership level, he doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it. Anyway, we're waiting. Jeff wants to hear as soon as we hear from the analysts, yada, yada, yada." The big statement that comes from that is Rob Manfred, of course, at a leadership level, he just doesn't get it. And why doesn't he get it? Well, you probably guessed it already. Rob Manfred, Mets players and Marlins players didn't want to play. And Rob Manfred had the brilliant idea. And I believe this 100%, by the way. Rob Manfred, of course, he doesn't want to lose, you know, to have a game not played. Of course, games have to be played. You know, they have to honor those TV contracts. So basically Mets fan, you know, Mets players didn't want to play. Rob Manfred wanted them, as said here, he wanted them to take the field at a normal time, which was like 7 p.m. I think. Then he wanted them to leave the field to make a quote unquote statement, then come back to play an hour later. Now, I talked about before with the NBA, how everything felt so performative. This here is a big part of the reason why I don't believe none of this shit. This is peak fake activism by MLB. And it doesn't surprise me not one bit, considering who it comes from and the league it comes from, correct? And I don't think anyone who's listening to this would be surprised that Rob Manfred and MLB actually did something like this. You know, trying to take advantage, you know, to generate, you know, more publicity, get eyes, you know, so, oh, it was such a powerful statement. No, the fuck it's not. No, the fuck it's not. It's not going to change anything. But what was funny, too, was the statements made then by the Mets owners and by Rody Van Wagenen himself in what was so obviously damage control. It's hilarious. Here's a statement from the Mets chairman of the board and CEO Fred Wilpon. I am very stressed and disappointed to learn tonight that our general manager, Rody Van Wagenen, made disrespectful and inaccurate comments about our commissioner, a longtime close friend of mine. I hold Rob in the highest regard, and in no way are Brody's remarks reflective of my views of the or the organization's. Rob continues to be a great leader of Major League Baseball. I apologize for any harm this incident has caused Rob. Sucking some more dick. And then here's a statement from Mets COO Jeff Wilpon. To clear up any misunderstandings, it was my suggestion to potentially look into playing the game later because of scheduling issues. Brody's misunderstanding of a private conversation was and is inexcusable. We fully respect our players and the Marlins players' decision to not play tonight, and appreciate the sincerity of all those who wish to draw attention to social injustices and racial inequalities that must be addressed. And exactly how are you addressing them, Wilpon? Oh, nothing. Okay. The entire Mets organization remains committed to creating meaningful change in our society. Bullshit. So that is very clear. Damage control. Now, we'll talk about Rob Manfred right now, like, in a little bit. But that's hilarious to me. And then you get the statement from the Mets GM, Rody Van Wagenen. And I'm quoting all this, by the way. Jeff Wilpon called Commissioner Manfred this afternoon to notify him that our players voted not to play. They discussed the challenges of rescheduling the game. Jeff proposed an idea of playing the game an hour later. I misunderstood that this was the commissioner's idea. In actuality, this was Jeff's suggestion. The players had already made their decision, so I felt the suggestion was not helpful. My frustration with the commissioner was wrong and unfounded. I apologize to the commissioner for my disrespectful comments and poor judgment in inaccurately describing the contents of his private conversation with Jeff Wilpon. This is all a bunch of bullshit. like, this is so obviously damage control. It's fucking incredible. Basically, Mets management said, we can't have Rob Manfred's public image take yet another hit. We're going to bite the bullet instead, and then make Rody Van Wagenen bite three bullets. Basically, that's all there is to it. I just wanted to say this because it kind of leads me into the Rob Manfred topic that we're going to talk about. And not only that, but also because it kind of just is yet another reminder of how hilariously inept the Mets are as a franchise. Somehow, I mean, they lost the game to the Yankees, who lost seven straight. They lost the game because Dylan Betances, who's a new Met, by the way, so he's acquiring himself very well with his new team. He threw a pitch to the backstop. If the backstop wasn't there, that pitch he threw would have gone to like the seventh row behind home plate. Like, it was crazy. But yeah, I mentioned how this kind of leads us into the Rob Manfred topic. So let me excuse me while I take a little sip of water and we'll get right into it. All right. So Rob Manfred. Now, that comment from Rody Van Wagenen about Rob Manfred about, you know, on the leadership level, he just doesn't get it. That's very true. Now, I took the liberty of actually going and kind of doing a little bit of a Rob Manfred biography here for y'all, so we can actually understand really who Rob Manfred is, where does he come from, why is he working with MLB, and all this good shit, right? So let's get into it. So Rob Manfred, he's 60 plus years old, if I'm not mistaken. He's a Harvard graduate, and this is important here. Rob Manfred is a lawyer. I understand that. He began working with MLB in 1987, so he's been around for a while. During, and this is important again, during collective bargaining deals. So keep that in mind. He joined MLB as a full-time, on a full-time basis, my bad, in 1998, serving as the executive vice president of economics and league affairs. Remember, he's a lawyer. He's represented MLB in collective bargaining agreements with the MLBPA three times. If I'm not mistaken, it was 02, 06, and 2011, something like that. He was promoted to chief, he was promoted to chief operating officer in 2013, and he was selected by MLB owners to succeed Bud Selig in August of 2014, taking over officially in January of 2015. His goals, now, what he said he wanted to do when he became commissioner, of course, there's a lot of talk about, what's your plan for growing the game, for helping baseball reach its new, reach a new level. And I'm quoting him here. His goals were youth outreach, good, embracing technology, good, quickening the pace of play, okay, maybe in some aspects, okay, strengthening player relations, in theory, good, we all know how that works, and creating a more unified business operation, which is also important. Now, since he came into office, he's enforced pace of pay rules, like limiting mound visits, other shit like that. Now, that's something I don't mind, more limited mound visits, and batters do need to stay in the batter's box long, they don't need to like go out the batter's box like 10 seconds after every single pitch. That makes no sense. He also wants to expand MLB, but we'll talk about that probably in a different podcast. And he's also done quite a few things. He's not very popular. You ask basically any baseball fan out there, and Rob Manfred is one of the worst, if not the worst commissioner, depending on how long they've been around. Well, actually, no, they'll probably tell you that regardless of how long they've been around, they'll tell you that Rob Manfred is the worst commissioner they've ever seen. Now, Rob Manfred has referred to the World Series trophy as a piece of metal before. That's not me making it up. He literally said that. He also, when asked, he was asked this, what would be a successful 2020 season, with the Corona shit and all that. And he basically said, handing over the trophy to a smiling owner, that would be a successful season. Because of course, that's everything that every fan wants to see. The owner lifting the trophy. Lame ass fucking trophy presentation. Anyway. He's also, we all know how he reacted to the Houston Astros scandal. Basically try to gloss over it because he doesn't want the stench of that hurting MLB for 50 years down the road, which it will anyway. And we know how he's reacted, the Joe Kelly suspension, making it basically taboo to attack the Astros in any way, not suspending any Astros players. Oh dear. And then I got three more points here. This one point, it actually directly enters in conflict with one of his original goals, which was youth outreach. Rob Manfred is, at the owner's wishes, let's not be mistaken here, he's killing minor league baseball. He's gotten rid, and we've talked about this before in the podcast, he's gotten rid of so many minor league teams. And yeah, like, and that's so many communities that have lost their baseball team. We've talked about this. But that, like, that doesn't make sense. Like, if one of your objectives was youth outreach, why would you get rid of a lot of minor league baseball communities? Minor league baseball is one of the most genuine ways that baseball gets new fans, because kids go to minor league baseball games from the time they're like 3 years old, two, 3 years old, and they grow up around the game. Those kids are very likely to want to pick up a bat. And those kids are very likely to, if they don't pick up a bat or if they don't have an actual career, which a lot don't, to watch baseball for a long time. Those are the people you need to target. those are the people that will help grow the game. Grassroots fans. But of course, Manfred is the owner's puppet. And that's something that's very important to understand. Everything he does in terms of big moves is done because the owners want it done. Manfred's just the public head. So when you attack Rob Manfred, which I am because he's inept, and he's not a leader in any way, and he gives baseball a terrible image, I understand that it's MLB owners that are the ones really making these decisions. Manfred is just there to be the public figure who takes the heat. So understand that it's MLB owners that are killing these minor league baseball teams because they interfere with them getting 100% of the possible profits. Is the same reason why there's blackouts still. Really? In a pandemic? When people can't go to the fucking stadium and you're still employing blackouts? Really? That's how you grow the game? Okay. I've said it a couple times already. It's important to understand. Rob Manfred is a lawyer. Rob Manfred doesn't like baseball. This is something I've said a million times. If you follow me on Twitter, you know. Rob Manfred does not like baseball. Everything about what he does and how he talks about it tells you that. He talks about the sport that he's the commissioner of as if it's a boring, lifeless, terrible sport that he just needs to fix. Here's the problem, Rob Manfred. And I know you're not going to listen to this, because even if you somehow were listening to this podcast, you would have probably turned it off, because I don't think constructive criticism is something that you will take. So here's something. One of the things that makes baseball unique when compared to the other major sports is the fact that there is no clock. There's no time limit. There's no shot clock. That is one of the biggest parts of baseball's charm. Baseball requires a long attention span. It just does. And you can never, ever appeal to 15-year-old kids who've watched basketball all their lives and who are attached to their phones all day, getting instant gratification. Those people that did not grow up with baseball, you're going to have a hard time getting them to like baseball and actually like it, and not just like a home run. You know what I mean? That's why shit like minor league baseball is important. Now, I will say, MLB is much better now at social media and, you know, all that aspect, and YouTube, than it was before, but I'm still scared shitless to use any sort of MLB footage. When I do the threads, I'm scared of shit, because I'm like, I just know this shit can get flagged at any time and we get the podcast account taken down. There's still that fear. Open the floodgates, man. It's frustrating because really at the end of the day, like I said, he's just the owner's puppet. So there's no reason for me to get mad at Manfred himself. But it's just frustrating to see, you know, the direction that baseball is being taken in by all these greedy ass owners. And really, there's not a whole lot I can do right now. Like, it's just frustrating. You know, that the sport that I think is the greatest sport on planet Earth is being fucked over. And minor league baseball being killed will have a long-term effect on baseball. And that's real. But that's besides the point. That's another conversation. And that's really not the conversation we're trying to have right now. Because, you know, that's for another time. We can have a longer, actually more drawn out, you know, two-person conversation about that whole topic. One more thing about Rob Manfred, people. He's signed through 2024. And I can guarantee you that since he's increasing the profits the owners make, the owners like Rob Manfred very much. So we're going to see him for quite a while, I would say. I don't know how this ends. I don't know exactly how long they can take to actually realize that they're putting, you know, that they're putting poison in their own investments long term. A lot of them probably don't care. And that's really one of the problems we're seeing right now. So yeah, I think that was pretty much it. I think I went over every single topic. If you stuck with me and made it all the way through, thank you for listening. I know that, you know, listening to podcasts with two people is probably more entertaining for most, because, you know, you get to hear ideas bouncing back and forth. Hopefully I made it interesting enough for you to actually enjoy it. And yeah, I think that was pretty much it. Remember to check out the podcast on Twitter. Like I said, you know, threads we do, Pat's articles, all that. Podcast available on all platforms, yada yada yada. And yeah, this was actually a pretty unique episode of the podcast. I think I'll enjoy it in this one. I'll enjoy it when Pat is back though. But yeah, that was episode 15 of the Pinch Talk podcast. Thank y'all so much for listening to us and supporting us. And yeah, that was Mario. Peace out, people. That was actually, god damn, peace. No, ain't nobody say peace out no more, man. I'm gonna leave that in though. But yeah, peace, people.